Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 222. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about tree houses, orangutans, and proboscis monkeys as we go to Borneo. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have two news stories for you. The first one you probably heard is a sad one, that one of the killer whales at Orlando's SeaWorld lived up to the name, unfortunately, this week when a trainer was dragged into the pool and drowned. So that's a story that's still unraveling in terms of what they're going to do with that killer whale, but certainly sad news. And then in strange, sad news, but we're probably going to see more of this with cruise ships getting larger, and it's such a confined space. We had a problem on a ship in the Caribbean this week with a Celebrity Mercury, where one out of every four of the 1,800 passengers got sick, ended up with upset stomach, vomiting, diarrhea, the sort of usual traveler's disease. But they basically put the ship under quarantine. Everybody was supposed to spend the time in their cabin until the virus passed. They brought on some additional medical crew. So they were given vouchers for another cruise since they had to spend the time in quarantine, but that doesn't sound like the ideal Caribbean cruise ship vacation. For links to both of those stories, as well as a link to this week's This Week in Travel, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Betty from Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase, come to talk to us about Borneo. Betty, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
And I should say welcome to the show finally. I was just telling Betty that I have listened to Betty's podcast, Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase, for so long, and I've heard her on various other programs. I actually got to the point I swore that we had had her on the show before, but she, if you look in the archives, you can find that I am just mistaken in that. So welcome to the show. Finally, my apologies for not getting you on sooner, but I honestly thought we'd had you on.
Well, that's the weird thing about podcasts, because it is so personal that you start to feel like you know people.
It's very strange when I talk to fellow podcasters, especially because the voices are so familiar.
Yeah.
So, very much so. So, first of all, we should mention just quickly, there may be actually somebody out there who doesn't know Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase,
yeah,
either
sure
the podcast or the upcoming
millions
book.
Millions and millions of people that don't know.
And it is a show that I enjoy, as Betty tells stories and also plays stories that she records from her work as a flight attendant for a major airline, still right. As yet undisclosed. Definitely something to check out. It's just a very enjoyable show. Comes out, I would say, roughly once a month.
Right. Yeah, lots of pilot and flight attendant stories. So if you have any interest in the airlines or aviation or just traveling.
Or if you have any funny stories of travel, then Betty's the person to get them to. So.
Yeah, that's true. You can always use the content.
And Betty also has an upcoming book of those stories coming out, or has already hit the store shelves?
It's out.
It's out.
Betty
wow,
and the
that's
Sky
great.
With a Suitcase. It's on Amazon.com. I'm still shocked that I have a book. They're actually calling it, you might find this is funny because you have a podcast. They're saying, even though I don't know if it's true, that it's the first podcast to be turned into a book. So they're calling it a book.
I think it's that funny. One I have not heard.
I know. Anyway. Yeah, so I haven't confirmed that it's the first podcast that's been turned into a book. But
I vaguely feel that there are some others, but I can't come up with any. So
I can't come up with them either. But anyway, yes, I have a book. I never thought I'd have a book. Love the podcast for that.
And then we had invited you to come on the show and talk about one of your most recent travels, which has been someplace that I've been dying to have someone come into the show about. You got to Borneo.
Yes, in November.
Excellent.
I've always wanted to go to Borneo, so it was particularly thrilling to me. I had watched, I think, a Julia Roberts documentary about the orangutans and one of the rehabilitation centers many, many, many years ago, so it's been on my list of places that I definitely had to see.
So that's what drew you to Borneo, first of all?
The orangutans.
Okay.
And the proboscis monkeys.
Okay.
You know what they are?
Yes, exactly, with the nose.
Yeah, very strange nose that sort of looks like male genitalia, which is very strange, but then the bigger the nose, the more females they get in their harem. Anyway, just the look of them, and they're so exotic, and I don't believe they're anywhere else, so I wanted to see the proboscis monkeys, too.
And what was the highlight? Was that the highlight of your trip to Borneo?
The wildlife, certainly.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the jungle, so I also love it because there's lots of jungle activities there. The wildlife definitely was, it was really nice. I got to see the orangutans in the wild, and huge wildlife fan. So when you watch shows and things, you're afraid that the numbers are so dwindling that you couldn't easily see one in the wild. And the fact that I did just was heartwarming.
What are the numbers like of orangutans in the wild in Borneo? Are there a lot at this point, or are they endangered?
They're endangered, but
okay,
the numbers are getting much better.
They have
two rehabilitation centers in the two different sections of Borneo, and so they try to reintroduce them to the wild. And the fact that I took a river cruise in the Kinabatangan River, and the fact that I saw three in like a half an hour river cruise made me feel much better. You know, three out in the wild. So
excellent.
That was exciting.
And what was your itinerary? Let's jump back a little bit there to give us a little overview of the trip.
Sure. I flew in to Kuching, which means cat, which I think is funny. There's two sections of Borneo. You have Sarawak and Sabah. And most people in general go to Sabah because there's very exciting islands, some of the best diving in the world. So I think that most tourists go to that section, but I started off in the other section, which is Sarawak. I don't ever usually have a huge itinerary when I'm traveling because I change my mind all the time. I don't make reservations. I just go. And it's really good that I don't because I'll have an idea. I always get a book. So I had a Brat book this time. And I always have a book, so I have an idea of where I want to go. But then when you get there, other tourists or local people will say, oh, no, don't go there. You know, you should go here. So I change my mind continuously. So I flew into Kuching. And then I went to the Damai Beach area and stayed in a treehouse, which was really fun. That's another thing I had wanted to do was stay in a treehouse. So I stayed in a treehouse where you were like up in the canopy level, and there were monkeys right outside my balcony. And then there was the waves from the South China Sea right outside underneath that, you know, with the rainforest right there. And it's moments like that where I'm like, oh, I just love my job because it lets me go to places like this.
My goodness. I'd love to see a picture of that. I don't have a mental image there. That sounds great.
That was one of the things I knew I wanted to do was go stay in the treehouse. So that was really fun. And then from there, I went to Baku National Park because I was so determined to see the proboscis monkeys that I had read that there were a large number of them there, and they have many hiking trails in the national park. So I went there, even though that was a very difficult journey to the national park. One of the things I haven't mentioned is I was traveling alone. And sometimes when you're traveling alone, you run into obstacles because where there can be tours to take you on certain things, lots of times there's a minimum. Like you need a minimum of two or four passengers before they run the tour.
Okay.
Or you have to pay double or four times as much, which I'm not going to do. So I wanted to go to this national park, but I couldn't arrange a tour because I was by myself. So I just decided to go do it alone. No tour, no guide. Sometimes that works out great, and sometimes it's not as good. So I got a local guy to drive me to the national park. I arranged it through my treehouse hotel, and we did that. But he drops me off at this jetty and says, well, you have to take a boat now. And I'm like, I have to take a boat? Because, you know, I just thought I was going to get driven to the national park, and then I'd hike around and see my proboscis monkeys. But no, he said, oh, no, you have to take a boat. And there was nobody else, so I hired the boat myself. And he also said, well, what time do you want to pick you up from this boat? So, like, I had to give him a time, which was a problem because I didn't realize how long the journey was going to be just to get to National Park. So I told him, like, 3:30. Anyway, I should have had more time. Then I get in this boat. So we're going down this river. with just one local man, and we're a little ways out, and he starts taking his pants off, which makes you nervous when you're by yourself with a local man.
And I would even make me nervous. So
I know, but it turned out he had to get out of the boat because the tide was out and the water level was so low that he couldn't run a motor anymore. So then he starts walking with the boat, and I'm already thinking this isn't looking that good because you know, the water is so low. And then he says, "Okay, here you go." And we're like, I don't know, a mile and a half from the shore. And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "You gotta walk." And I'm like, oh, I had no idea. So I was like, I had to like got out in the mud, and it was like, you know, when the mud is really deep, so each step is like, and then tried, I couldn't figure out where I was going. It took me so long. I was covered in mud. Now I have to try to find the proboscis monkeys by myself. It's like I didn't realize just getting to the park was going to take me hours and hours and hours. It didn't leave me much time to actually find the monkeys. I started hiking, and I kept running into people who were on their tours. I would ask them, "Did you see the monkeys?" They're like, "No, you have to get here early in the morning or like at sunset, or else you don't get to see them." And I'm like, "No," because I've already missed the morning. I'm not going to be here for sunset. And I'm thinking, I just walked through all that mud. It's the wrong time of day. That's terrible. So I thought, I'll keep going. And I run into more people, and I'm like, "Did you see the monkeys?" And they're like, "No, you're not going to see them at this time of day." And I'm like, "Ooh." So I keep walking. And then I get to a part of the forest where I thought, well, you know, if I was a monkey, this looks like a nice spot. So I just sat and waited and waited, and then I saw a monkey, and then another one, and another one, and a baby, and a male, and I was like, oh. So there's bad parts about traveling alone, because sometimes you can't arrange things, or there's no one right to fall back on. But then there's when you're by yourself, when you're not with a guide, when you're not on a tour, and you find something yourself, it's so much more exciting. So, you know, the highs are higher, and the lows are lower. But I did get to see my monkeys.
Well, I wonder also if just because you were one person, if you didn't scare them off too. You know, just
it, because I didn't scare them off. Yeah,
yeah, because you weren't a crowd of people or whatever.
Right.
Interesting.
And making noise, because I find that a lot. Because I tend to do a lot of traveling around animals. I'm sort of like pecking my way through the animal kingdom. I want to see everything. So I try to be quiet. It's hard for me since I talk a lot. But if you're in the jungle or a forest, you're doing a lot of talking, you're not going to see any wildlife.
Right, exactly. Now, they remind me of cartoon characters from the pictures I've seen. They really look
they
like
do,
something out
they?
Of the Flintstones or something, yeah.
Well, that's why it was so much fun. And that was, some people said to me, you're going halfway around the world to see a monkey? I'm like, yes, I am. Because like, to most people, that doesn't seem like a good reason to go somewhere. But to me, it makes perfect sense.
What was the biggest surprise in Borneo?
You know,
having to walk the last mile to the shore.
You know, I had a lot of surprises there because I had an image in my head, sort of like the Heart of Darkness. I thought it would be more wild and leech-ridden. Uh-huh. And it was surprisingly civilized and easy to get around. And almost everybody spoke English, which was a huge surprise because I'm always ready for language difficulties. Uh-huh. But they learn English in school, so just about everyone had a level of English. I didn't have any trouble, except for in the other side, Sabah, they have a lot of immigrants from like Indonesia and the Philippines, so a lot of shanty towns. Those people don't speak English, but in Sarawak, everybody spoke English. Food was great. Didn't have any trouble with transportation. I kind of forgot that it was Asia. You know, it's Malaysia, but it's still Asia, and Asia in general is very civilized. I sort of had myself geared up for more difficulties than I had. So that was actually a nice surprise.
Excellent. We went partway through your itinerary there. Where did you go for next?
And then I was going to fly to the Naiha Caves. They have like one of the largest caves in the world. But I was in the airport and I was talking to a local man and he said, "Oh no, don't go there. You should go to Mulu National Park." And he started saying all this great stuff they had there, and you could see so much more wildlife there, and it was so much more in the heart of the jungle. And I just went to the agent right there and like changed my plans and flew to Mulu National Park. And that was a wonderful tip. You know, I find, especially when you're by yourself, I just start talking to people, and I think they're surprised that you're talking you just walk or come up or sit next to them and start talking, that I do get a lot of good advice. People are so friendly. So Mulu National Park was really nice. It's a national park that they built these plankways, like all the walkways have planks, so you don't have to be in the mud, so you don't get as many leeches and things like that. But they have this cave system there that's really amazing. They have this cave, it's called the Deer Cave, that has millions and millions and millions of bats in it. And I hadn't read about this. I like when it's a surprise, you know, it's not something I've been anticipating, because sometimes then it's even more exciting. Uh-huh. They have set up bleachers at the mouth of the cave, and at sunset, the millions and millions of bats fly out for the night to go get insects. But what's weird is they swirl around so they feel like they get enough numbers, like thousands and thousands and thousands of them, because they don't want the bat hawks to get them. So it's just like animals, sometimes they feel it stronger in a bigger number. So they swirl around and swirl around, and when they feel like they're big enough, then they come out of the cave, but they come out in these formations, like swirls and ribbons, and the people, they set up the bleachers, and everybody's like, ooh, ah, just like fireworks. But it's bats. It's so strange, because it's almost like it can't possibly be real. Like, it looks like some special effect, or like in the movie Ghost, where like the soul comes out of the body and then like dissipates. That's exactly what the bats look like. So strange. But it was really fun. I actually hiked back there the next day, too, because again, was like, ooh, ah, with all the people. Because I thought, I probably will never see bat fireworks again. Have you ever heard of that?
Well, I've heard of the bleachers at Carlsbad Caverns in the U.S.
And do they have the bats come out there, too?
And they have the bats come out, yeah. Do the same thing at sunset at Carlsbad.
You know what's so funny? It's terrible, really. I don't take advantage of all the things we have here in the States. Let's go into other countries. I think we have that here.
Well, maybe someday when you're no longer flying and you could do a road trip.
Yeah, which is fun too. I guess I figure since I can fly for
exactly,
might as well take advantage of it. So then I flew to Sabah, which is the other part of Borneo, and I went to Sandakan, which is like a local town where they had a really fun Sunday market. I like when I feel like I'm in a place where there aren't a lot of tourists, and you're just, you know, seeing how the locals live. And they actually have, not far from there, another orangutan rehabilitation center. So I went to see the orangutans there. I had also been in
Sounds like for Sarah. Orangutans who have a substance abuse problem. But
it does, doesn't it? It's like orangutan rehab. But essentially, they're just trying to make them so they can put them back out in the wild. Mm-hmm. Get them used to it.
It's not run by Betty Ford or anything like that.
No. Okay. I don't think there's any alcohol or drugs involved in the rehabilitation center for the orangutans. You know, I enjoyed both the orangutan rehabilitation centers, but there is a little bit of sort of a zoo-like quality,
sure,
which isn't ever as fun as seeing the animals in the wild. So that's why then my next stop, I actually had to pass Mount Kinabalu, which is a huge volcano there, which I would have loved to hike. I'm also a big hiker, but sometimes there's only so much time in a trip, you know. Just, I didn't have days to do that hike.
Right.
So I went to the Kinabatangan jungle, and I stayed at the Kinabatangan jungle camp, which is another reason why I sort of do these trips now, is I kind of feel like there'll be a time where I won't want to stay in jungle camps, you know, like as you get older. So I figure I might as well do the things now that later on I might want more creature comforts. But the jungle camp was great. It was really simple.
Or comforts with less creatures, perhaps.
Yeah, that's what I want later. So I'm doing more of the creature and less creature comforts now. And I'm older, I'll do the Europe.
And how rustic is the camp?
It was pretty rustic, but the food was really good. I mean, they have like survival camps and things there that are even more. I don't ever go. It's also funny to me how there's levels of comfort while you're traveling. And I don't ever go to the very bottom. But I don't go to the top. I'm sort of like mid-range. So it was funny, in my next destination, the beach area, Saporna, I was staying at the Sea Fest, which was like $40 a night, and most of the people were on like budget travelers, backpackers, and they were staying at the $10 a night place, so they'd be like, ooh, you're staying at the Sea Fest. You know, look at you, and I'm thinking, that's so funny, because like in the United States, if you could find a hotel for $40, you'd be thrilled. But there, I'm like staying at the hoity-toity place.
If the United States, $40 would probably have a few creature comforts.
A lot of creatures, yeah. So the Jungle Camp is great because you can take these river safaris and they have night boat rides, and the animals there have figured out that the humans, when they're contained in the boat, aren't a danger to them. So they don't seem, they just look at you, they don't run from you, and they have elephants there. So I saw elephants swimming. You know, I've seen elephants other places, but I actually hadn't seen them in a river swimming before. Uh-huh. And I kind of forgot that I might see elephants. I was so in the monkey orangutan mode that when we came upon the elephants, it was like, oh, hey, that really adds to the trip too. So that was really, really fun. And then I did go to Saporna, which is the diving mecca because the Sipadan Islands are out there. It's like world-class diving.
Uh-huh.
I didn't actually get to go to Sipadan because one of my regrets for not arranging is there are a few things in Borneo that you have to have a permit for. And wait for a permit because they only let a certain amount of people go at a time to preserve the natural environment. So I didn't have a permit. So, you know, there is drawbacks to not planning. So I guess I wish I would have done that. But you could go to islands very close to it, like Malbu, which I went to, and it was phenomenal snorkeling. I don't know how it's better. Apparently, it's even more exciting there, but maybe another trip.
So to go to the other islands, just to the islands itself, you have to have a permit, not even just to dive or snorkel or whatever.
Yes, just to get there. Because I don't know, there was that terrible tourist incident
eight years ago,
and that was on that island. So they used to have accommodations on that island, but because it's off of the coast and closer to Indonesia and the Philippines, that's why they had the guerrillas take the tourists. And so now they have a lot of security there, but they also don't let many tourists go there also. So,
and when we say guerrillas, we don't mean the animal. Yep.
No, because I can't wait to see them at some point. They're still on my list.
Right.
the actual guerrillas.
Gorilla with the Spanish word for small war rather than gorilla with the O, so yeah.
But I didn't feel at all unsafe anywhere in Borneo. It felt extremely safe. I wouldn't go hiking by myself in the United States, but you know, I was hiking a lot there by myself. It seemed perfectly safe. So it is weird how you change your behaviors in other countries sometimes.
Interesting. What was the best day you had of all those?
I really enjoyed the bats and the bat caves, and like you can go in the cave and you get all that guano in your hair. But I would say,
way to sell it there, Betty.
I haven't, you know, I can't say I've ever had that in my hair before. Like, I always like first. I was all prepared for the leeches, and I kept running into people that had pictures where they looked like they were shot because, you know, they had all this blood from having the leeches on them. But I didn't have those, so I was prepared. I always prepare myself for the worst, but luckily I'm still a leech virgin.
I've actually run into that, but way domestic, over here in the Carmel River. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you have a few or?
A small number, but plural, and they were fairly small too at that time. It was a long time ago, back when I was in high school, I think.
It's a very strange feeling, isn't it? Apparently, they kept saying, well, they're clean. I'm like, they're clean? Like, they're sucking your blood. They're like, well, they don't carry malaria or anything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's just the idea of something sucking your blood.
Yeah, besides the thought of leeches, any warning you would give from your trip?
I wouldn't have many warnings except for there is a few disappointments in Borneo because a lot of people here understand the problem. They have a problem there with clearing the jungles and planting palm trees for the palm tree oil that people use in China and India for cooking. And that is really sad. I wasn't expecting the sadness of seeing. Like, I was driving from where I was at in Saporna in the beach, and I went to Tawa because I was going to fly back to Kota Kinabalu, which is a main city there. And on the drive, it was like a two-hour drive, I saw nothing but palm oil trees. And it's so sad because when they burn down the forest and plant the palm oil trees, that environment doesn't work for any of the wildlife or the animals or the birds. You see nothing, and you just see the miles and miles of it. And that is a little heart-wrenching. But other than that, the sadness of actually seeing the deforestation, that is something I would warn people about.
Okay. And then besides the permits, anything else you wish you had known?
The permits was a big one because there's also another area called the Dunham Valley, and they have the largest amount of wildlife. And again, there, you either have to be a researcher or have a permit. So again, I couldn't do it because of the permit, because I really wanted to see the tarsiers. Do you know what they are?
I do not. You've got me there.
They look like, remember the movie Gremlin where you had the cute fuzzy thing with the big eyes before they got wet and turned into? Those really cute little things, kind of like a bush baby, and their heads spin 360 degrees around. But you only see them at night. And I really wanted to see one. So another island near there in Indonesia, Sulawesi, they have a whole bunch of tarsiers. So I'm going to have to probably make another trip back to see them. But in the Denham Valley, they have a lot of those. And I was really hoping to see them so I could check them off my pecking list. I've seen all the animals in the wild kingdom, but I didn't get to see them. So.
And so with a permit, you would have either had to get it months in advance or wait while you were there. Is that a possibility? What were the options?
Yes, I could have done that. But like when I was calling there, they said, oh, yeah, well, it'll be probably like 3 or 4 weeks before you get a permit. I don't have that kind of time. So, yeah, I should have done that ahead of time. So I actually haven't run into that problem in a lot of other countries, permit problems. So I wasn't prepared for that. So that was like the only disappointment. But I managed to have a fabulous time without the permit. So.
Okay. And of the pictures you took on your trip, what one brings you back to Borneo? What's the one you look at and you're right back there again?
The proboscis monkeys. I would have thought it would be the orangutans.
Interesting.
Lots of times it's not what you expect, because I loved seeing the orangutans, but like in the wild, they were kind of further away. And when I would see them in the rehabilitation center, like I said, you know that it is contained. So, yeah, it's the proboscis monkeys. I loved them.
Who's the most memorable person you met while you were there?
The most memorable person I met was the guy who ran the Kinabatang jungle camp. Sometimes when you're traveling, you run into these people that have this like huge personality, boisterous, and just the life of the party. And it is amazing how almost on every trip you will run into someone like that, that has just like a lot of charisma, and he really makes that very basic camp more fun because he has so much enthusiasm for the area. I would say he was my favorite.
Okay. So Borneo is a little ways away from home.
Yeah.
And we talked about what your expectations were. When did you feel furthest from home? And when did you feel like this isn't any different from home?
Well, the furthest from home would have to do with the food. They eat a lot of strange things there. And I was staying at a hotel in Kuching, which is one of the two major cities. And I went down for breakfast, and I didn't recognize anything. Like, I was like, I don't know what any of this is. That's unusual, because like normally there's staples with food, and there was none of those. There were lots
Could you
like,
at least put it in the animal family or the fruit family?
There was like dried fish. They eat a lot of dried fish, which doesn't seem like breakfast food to me.
Well, no, it stays crunchy even under the milk, so that's really the advantage.
So I really liked the food, like especially for lunch and dinner, because it was kind of like a mixture of Thai, Indian, Japanese. But for breakfast, sometimes I was like, ooh, I don't know what this stuff is. it was fun, but I also felt very far away from home.
Okay.
And then what it felt most like home would probably be driving around. Like, I was surprised how nice the roads were and how organized everything was. Like I said, it was so civilized. So it actually felt very modern.
Interesting. You said you were using the Brat Guide. What did the Brat Guide recommend that you thought you would just recommend people skip?
Well, actually, I didn't go there, but it would be the Naiha Caves, which are the biggest caves, which in the book made sound very exciting to me, so I was excited about going there. And then when I was talking to the local people, they said, oh, don't bother going there because they're having a big problem with people collecting the bat guano, apparently. You can make a lot of money from that.
I tell you, people collect anything. So.
How weird is that? Like, I'm not sure what they use it for. But
fuel, as I recall.
Oh, okay, there you go. So they were saying that for the tourists,
or nitrates. Actually, I say fuel, but I think it's a fertilizer.
Yeah, fertilizer. That's what I was going to guess. So they were saying for the tourists, it's not as interesting. There's just like one big cave.
Interesting.
Whereas if you go to Mulu, they had so many caves. They had like one clear water cave there where they say if you put the water on your face or if you swim in the water, which I did, you know, you get 10 years younger.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was like, maybe I should stay here a few days. So there were a lot more caves. There was a lot more diverse things to do and see, and had really interesting insects there. I know a lot of people in the United States wouldn't think insects can be interesting, but Borneo actually has some of the best insects in the world. I mean, they have gigantic, strange-looking, colorful insects. So they were really fun to see.
Interesting. As we go to wind this down,
okay,
finish the sentence. You really know you're in Borneo when what?
When there's a chance of seeing orangutans and monkeys and having monkeys right outside your balcony.
Okay. And before you go to Borneo, one thing you should pack?
I'd say sunscreen.
Okay.
Or just maybe also pack your sense of adventure. How's that?
All right. And if you had to summarize Borneo in three words, what three words would you use?
Jungle.
Okay.
Good food. Except for breakfast, that's more than three words, isn't it? And monkeys.
We get a lot of hyphenated words in the unusual hyphenization when I ask this question. And your third one would be?
Was monkeys.
Monkeys, okay. Betty, thanks so much for taking the time to come on The Amateur Traveler, and I'm so glad to finally have you on and to hear more about your story of Borneo, and certainly encourage everybody to go check out where can we find Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase.
BettyInTheSky.com. There's all kind of information about my book there also.
Excellent. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was fun.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that's an iPhone app called Shipmate. If you happen to be sailing on Royal Caribbean, this is an app you may want to pick up. It is a free app that has deck plans, has descriptions of all the different shops and restaurants, as well as the shore trips for the different sailings. So that's something I would recommend, Shipmate, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the review of that I did at the blog at amateurtraveler.com. In news of the community, if you happen to be doing a tour through Globus, and Globus has four different brands, including Globus, Cosmos, Avalon, Waterways, and Monogram, I just signed an affiliate agreement with them where I'm going to be able to give you a 5% discount. So I'm excited about that because that's a way that I can actually make some money to support the show, and at the same time, you can save money on your trip. So if you're interested in that, just go to amateurtraveler.com/Globus and check out their different tours and see if there's something of interest to you. If you don't follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you may have missed the news that The Amateur Traveler, or my personal account, was banned from YouTube recently. And if you've seen the sort of video I put out on the show, that may come as a surprise to you. It certainly came as a surprise to me. And by the time you hear this, that will all have been resolved. But if you're interested in hearing the whole story, check out a post that I put up on The Amateur Traveler blog. It's just a bizarre story. It was apparently malicious, as far as we can tell. And then YouTube did not catch the fact that someone was reporting my videos as spam in error. And it's just an interesting saga. And that's what my last 3 weeks have been like. I got an email from Keith, who is a longtime resident of Philadelphia, and took issue with the description of the guest on the Lancaster County episode of Scrapple. In fact, there is no scraps at all in Scrapple, Keith writes. It is a delicious mixture of broth and grains cooked slowly, then pan-fried to a crisp. And Keith actually sent me a picture of a t-shirt that he has from the Down Home Diner in Philadelphia that actually describes Scrapple. So if you're looking for a Scrapple t-shirt, Down Home Diner in Philadelphia. I have some other emails, but I'm actually trying to record two shows back-to-back before I go to Hong Kong so that you don't have a break while I'm gone. And I wanted to thank everybody who voted for me in Nomadic Matt's contest. We do have two contests going on. One is, if you want to win a copy of Photos Israel, remember, just make sure that you have joined the email newsletter list by March 18th. And then the second one that I want to announce is we are going to do a photo contest. I meant to announce this last week. This will be during the month of March, and the way to enter a photo is to join the Amateur Traveler Facebook fan page, if you're not already a member, and that's facebook.com/amateurtraveler, and submit a photo on one of two topics, either spring or reflections. something that has to do with reflections. Either topic will work. And then Ralph Velasco, who is doing the Egypt photo tour with me in November, is actually going to judge the contest and is offering a copy of his book to the winner of that contest that will give you all sorts of trips for travel photography. So thanks, Ralph, for that. And remember, if you're interested in the Egypt tour, to sign up for that. I used to be afraid that we wouldn't get enough people to go. I'm starting to get afraid that we'll fill it up before everybody who's interested from the Amateur Traveler signs up, because Ralph is also signing up people also. So if you're interested in that, you might want to do that sooner rather than later. With that, we're going to bring this episode of the Amateur Traveler to a close. You know how to get a hold of me. Send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. Join the Facebook fan page. Leave a comment on the episode or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe.